On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 66, the worst movie ever made, now on DVD. Reader's Digest condensed books. And the Aztecs, and how the United States is like this ancient culture. This and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Tab for my diet. And the Flatus Show is a weekly variety podcast, variety show podcast in the style of a vaudeville act, just for you. Welcome to the Flatus Show. I'm Kenty, and Jose, my guest, my co-host. He's sleeping. He's taking a nap in the other room. You probably hear the tea kettle going. That's because John's making some tea. Welcome to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at, you can come to my website, theflatusshow.com, and you can find all the things you need to contact me through email and phone. My phone number is 206-339-JOSE, and that is courtesy of K7.net. It's a free service. It may be a toll call from wherever you're calling, but that's it. Doesn't cost anything more than the toll. And it might not even cost you anything if you have, depending on your service, too. So, there you go. Call me at 206-339-JOSE. Why was I thinking 207? Anyway. Let's say here, what else is there today? Okay, you already know about the website, theflatusshow.com. And you can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. This is the second week I've been offering a DVD to one of my listeners, who is, it's a Hollywood musical, and it's 10 musicals and 3 DVDs, and it has Glorifying the American Girl on one of them. What do you need to do? You need to be the first one, to send me content. A 10-minute segment, okay? On a subject of your choice, you can include a little ukulele song in there or something else. You know what the Flatus Show is like, but a 10-minute segment gets you the DVD, 3 DVDs here, Hollywood musicals. And you can watch Glorifying the American Girl if you haven't downloaded it yet from that website I mentioned last week and the week before. What else is going on in my part of the world? Well, I want to welcome any new listeners out there. Hi. I don't know if this is the first time you've been listening. I've been doing this show for about a year. I don't have a very limited space, so I only have 10 shows up at any one time, thereabouts. So if you want to listen to any older episodes, you need to contact me, and I can put them up in a special spot for you to download. Okay? this week's show is about Aztecs. It was very interesting. I learned a lot myself, and I hope you'll like it. But let's get on to some news. First off, recently, okay, there's an opera by Sir Michael Tippett, who is dead, by the way, an English composer, and he wrote an opera called The Midsummer Marriage, and it was premiered at Covent Garden in 1955. And there's been a studio recording of it in the 60s or 70s, Colin Davis on Philips label. And I have that, and it's fine. It's really good. But I always wanted to hear the premiere performance, because a young singer had a role in there who became very famous. And that young singer was none other than Joan Sutherland, who sang the role of Jennifer, a fiendish role. And there's also a bunch of other great singers in this performance. Richard Lewis is Mark. Edith Coates is the ancient priestess, I guess. Ottokar Krauss is Kingfisher. Adelaide Lee is Bella. John Lanigan is Jack. And a voice is Monica Sinclair. I love Monica Sinclair. She recently died, too, I think a couple years ago. But it's British, you know, all these British people, except for Ottokar Krauss, who is, I think, German or Austrian. So, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe 10 years ago. Let me see, is there a date on here? 1997, so it's nearly 10 years ago, the Gala label, and it's a company that releases broadcast performances from Europe from the 50s and, you know, whatever. They're really pirated performances from the radio, or actually in-house, like somebody actually went in and recorded it. But in this case, it was from a radio broadcast. And they released a broadcast from this performance, A Midsummer Marriage, the BBC broadcast. And the sound on it was pretty piss poor, okay? But it was the only thing available. What do you figure? You know, you have to buy it, right, if you want to hear it. And so I bought it, and, you know, I like it, you know. But the only thing that really annoys me in this performance, in this recording, the BBC felt like it had to have these little, like, have a narrator tell you what was going on, which is really annoying, because it's in English, the opera. And I've never heard this in any of the other BBC broadcasts, so that's a little annoying part of this particular recording. However, I found out recently, in 2006, Operadora has also released the same performance, I guess, another tape, because I listened to it and the sound is better, slightly. So if you're interested in the Michael Tippett Midsummer Marriage, the original performance, listening to that original performance with Joan Sutherland, Richard Lewis, and Edith Coates et al., and John Pritchard conducting, I recommend that you get the Operadora recording. It runs about $12.99. And if you're lucky, go to your local tower because they're closing down, which is another sad story. Tower Records this past week was sold to a liquidator, so all the tower locations are being, you know, liquidated, and there will be no more Tower Records. So for radio, for giant vinyl junkies and record store people, it's a sad day. Because there's nothing like going into the record store and actually seeing the CDs and feeling them and touching them and buying them. It's, you know, I don't know if I'll ever find another CD store. I mean, there's, you know, places like Sam Goody's, but that's not really a CD store. That's crap. It's all pop music. Forget about it. Nothing beats Tower. It's the last of its kind. So that's that. Okay, so I was at Tower. They're going out of business. I've been saving some money, so I've been getting some stuff on sale, things I've been wanting to get, but didn't really want to pay full price for. And I feel bad for doing it, but since they are going out of business, I'll give them as much business as I can, even though I'm against them closing Tower. I'm sure that the music distributors are also, like, up in arms, because Tower is a big thing, you know, it's mythic. So I bought two DVDs, one of which I love, this movie, The Pirate Movie, has Krista McNichol and Christopher Atkins, and it's a like a retelling of the Pirates of Penzance. It's great. I like it. A lot of people think it's hokey or whatever, but fuck you. I like it. I love Krista McNichol anyway, so anything Krista McNichol's in is okay by me. I'm waiting for them to release Little Darlings on DVD, which they haven't done yet. The second DVD I got is this thing called The Apple. MGM DVDs released it. I had seen this before, and I thought it was going to be, I knew it was going to be bad, okay? Because just to look at it, you know it's going to be a bad movie. And that's okay, because I like bad movies. Like, I like Showgirls. But that movie is so bad, it's good. It's stylistically bad. And it's not... Oh! I tried not to yawn today. And I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. So, yeah. Showgirls is just so bad, it's good. And you have to see it to believe it. It's funny. It's because it's so serious. The Apple, on the other hand, and I haven't watched the whole thing yet, may be the worst movie ever made. Now, they said Plan 9 from Outer Space was the worst movie ever made. The Apple surpasses Plan 9 from Outer Space. Plan 9 from Outer Space is Citizen Kane compared to The Apple. I love Plan 9 from Outer Space anyway, because that is so bad it is good. Edward Wood is charming. This Apple, it is The music is banal. The acting is warm, lukewarm. It's a pretty stupid story, which is sort of about, it's like an Adam and Eve story. It's really a religious story, and about Satan taking over the world, basically. And there's Eve, and they're all marked, and there's a big apple, and there's rock and roll, and boys dressed in leather, and it was made in 1980. And I found out it was filmed in Germany, so I have to watch the whole thing. I haven't seen the whole thing. I've only seen a little bit of it. Enough to know it's the worst movie ever made, if it's possible. So there, if you have a chance to see The Apple, you know, let me know what you think. If you think it's the worst movie ever made. What else do we have here? My notes. Okay, last week, John and I went to go see Hollywoodland. It's the movie about George Reeves, Superman, and apparently he had killed himself. He shot himself. And there were some questions as to whether it was a murder or not, and that's what the movie is about. I think the story really sounded fascinating, and the acting was okay. The way they told the story was not the best, and I think it made it kind of boring, and it was just too damn long. The acting was great, the sets were great, and I don't know what else you call it. The sets and the costumes were really great, so it's worth, you know, a couple dollars to see her on a DVD, but it's not, the movie is, I think it could have been told differently and better, so. But we went there, we had gone to dinner beforehand, and we had some time, so I'm like, oh, I'll play a video game. I haven't played video games in, like, I don't know, 20 years or whatever, probably less than 20 years, but I don't play them that often. So this is one with guns, and it's paintball or something. And you have to shoot at, like, ducks and chickens and these other people who are shooting you, like these farmers and everything. So I'm like, oh, I'll play this. So I put my quarter in. My God, I was so addicted to that game. I spent, like, $2 shooting them. I think I'd be a monster if I really had a paintball gun or a gun, went shooting. It was so much fun. Now, when I was in high school, I took rifle. We had in gym, that was one of our things we could do, was rifle. And we had a shooting range in the high school. And so I remember lying there on the ground with the rifle and shooting at the targets. You know, we each got a chance to do like 5 shoots per class. You know, it was like a couple of us. And I had real fun with that. And I remember my father used to take me to a rifle range too. He used to shoot, he had guns and rifles. And he went shooting targets. I remember doing that. I don't remember shooting anything there, but I remember doing it in high school. But it was so much fun with this video game. I mean, I could have one of those in my house. I could play it for hours. But the thing is, I kept on shooting the referees because these referees would shoot, pop up. Because they pop up, you know, you have to shoot them before they shoot you. And the referees were there, so that was that. That was fun. Should I talk about other podcasters? Because there's this stuff going on right now, which is just total crap. There's one podcaster, I won't mention it, but you'll know who I'm talking about. Recently changed identities. Sybil? I guess the purple crayon wasn't enough. But anyway, it's like, you know, oh yeah, I'm afraid you're going to go to China and figure out who's making iPods. I mean, really, is Apple quaking in their boots? Ooh, come on. You know, I don't buy Chinese products. I mean, let's talk about me right now. You know what I have to think about the Chinese. And I mean, I don't think anything about the Chinese personally. But you know what I think about the Chinese human rights? I've talked about this. And I've talked about boycotting Chinese products and stuff before. You know, you go into Target and everything is Chinese. It's like, and I said before, it's like a billion Chinese ghosts just looking at you. And I just can imagine the sweatshops, you know. It makes me feel dirty to go into those places and even buy a Chinese-made product. Now, today, John and I bought a new TV, and I said, if it's Chinese made, I don't want to get it. Now, I didn't look to see if it was Chinese made, but if it was, I'm going to have to do a couple more Hail Marys or something, because I feel dirty. I feel dirty when I buy something made in China. I mean, when I go shopping now, I look at the label. Where is it made? If it's, like, I bought a coat the other day. I was like, I really liked it. It was a good price. I'm like, I hope it's not China. I hope it's not China. I hope it's not China. I turn up the little thing. Vietnam. It's like, okay, baby. Vietnam's okay. Mexico's okay. You know, Thailand. Until we find out that, you know, something horrible is going on there. So it's probably just as bad. But China, we know that they're harvesting organs from their prisoners and stuff and doing all sorts of horrible things. And, you know, it's a communist country, and I don't know if communism itself is bad, but that regime is, you know, needs an enema, okay? Preferably one made in China. A Chinese-made enema, okay? And maybe North Korea is China's enema. So, the apple. I talked about the apple. Oh, yeah, Reader's Digest. Is my Reader's Digest book in here? Okay, Reader's Digest condensed the books. I have to look this up to see if they still make them, but I was at the dump the other day, the transfer station in Rockport, and we have a swap shop for books. And there's a whole, like, wall of Reader's Digest condensed version books. It's like, you know, you can get five whole books condensed down into, like, you know, will fit, I don't know, 400 pages or whatever. Maybe more than that. Maybe 800 pages. I have to look at the book. But anyway, I found one the other day because I never read a condensed book before, like a Reader's Digest condensed version. And there was five books, two of which I'm interested in. One is The Light at the End of the Piazza, and it was recently made into an opera, a musical by Adam Gettel, or whatever, who is Mary Rogers' son, Mary Rogers wrote Freaky Friday, you might know that, and her father is Richard Rogers of the musical fame, you know, of, like, you know, Oklahoma and all that, so he's in good standing, he's, you know, good genes for musicals, so some of his stuff is really interesting, and other stuff I find a little banal, but, you know, but for the most part, it's okay, it's good. But anyway, Light at the End of the Piazza isn't that. The second book in there, which I'm interested in reading, is Marnie, which was a movie made into a movie by Alfred Hitchcock with Tippi Hedren as Marnie. You might know Tippi Hedren from The Birds. I think that's the only two movies that she did for Mr. Hitchcock. The movie Marnie I've seen twice, and the first time I saw it, I thought it was pretty good. And the second time I thought, this is not as good as other Hitchcock movies, and I still believe that. John, though, loves Marnie, but I don't like it as much. I mean, I think it could have been done better. I think he was, like, forcing it into a format which it didn't really fit. So, because we were watching a bunch of hot Hitchcock movies over the past, I don't know, over the summer, we rented all these different Hitchcock movies and looked at them. One which I thought was really good was Torn Curtain, which got bad reviews, but I thought it was an excellent movie. And another one was Topaz, which also had gotten bad reviews when it originally came out. And I think it was a really good movie, too. So, go figure. Let's see here. Oh, I found something interesting. Let me, I hope I'm recording here. Okay. Let me minimize that. Let me open up my PDF file. Okay. Shop Pink podcast. I think I've talked about the Shop Pink Oddcast, Oddcast, Shop Pink, they're in Arizona. Well, I was looking at Pod Show, and I was just doing a search for my show, right? And it's in there, and they have this thing called the Unofficial Guide to the Flatus Show, and it has my RSS feed in there, and ways to listen to my show, and one of the Shop Pink guys, I don't know if it's Darren or the other guy. I'm sorry, other guy. Forget your name. But they wrote something really nice. Now, let me swing around here. They wrote, "The show is very dry, but very interesting and entertaining. This guy has a unique perspective on life, definitely worth listening to." So, Darren or whoever, or the other guy, or the two guys or whatever. Shaw Pink Odd Guest, thank you so much for writing that. And Joe G and Shaw Pink has put me on there. They listened to my show, so on this thing. Now, the only thing is with this Flatus show, Unofficial Guide, why do they have a picture of a man with a head, bald head, and earphones? Because I have artwork, so why doesn't it show up, Sherita? Sherita, Adam Curry, listen, Adam Curry, why doesn't my picture show up on the Unofficial Guide to the Flatus show on Pod Show? Sherita? So, maybe somebody can answer that. And then it says, which is odd, let me go down here, other shows like this, and they have thing called the Pussy Whipped Podcast, the Paul Raino Show, and The Parent as similar podcasts to The Flatus Show. Now, Pussy Whipped and The Parent? Come on. Come on. You know? How they get that? The Parent. I don't have children. Okay. Empty Threats, Video Games, Mexico City, Body Worlds. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, Body Worlds. Look up Body Worlds. It's really bad. So if it comes to your area, boycott it. Because they're probably Chinese prisoners in the exhibition. So you can look it up yourself. And I'm going to get on with the show. There you go. Here you go, kids.
Somebody's trying to take you away. Trying to steal you from me. Please don't believe anything that they say. Because, dear, it's all jealousy. 'Cause honest and truly, I'm in love with you. No one has taken your place in my heart. Somebody just wants to see us apart. Don't start to doubt me. Learn more about me. I'll admit I'm in love, but with nobody else. Honest and truly, it's you. Somebody's carrying tales I can see, hoping you'll think they are true. Someone's just wishing you'll quarrel with me and then look for somebody new. 'Cause honest and truly, I'm in love with you. No one has taken your place in my heart. Somebody just wants to see us apart. Don't start to doubt me. Learn more about me. I'll admit I'm in love, but with nobody else. Honest and truly, it's you.
Aztecs. Let's see here. Let's start with the Aztecs. I've been interested in the Aztecs for, I don't know, a long time. I've always been interested in history, and I've read a lot about Roman history. And back in I guess it was junior high. I had to do a report on Aztecs, and I was interested in that civilization from that point. As a little side note in Kenti history, I built a diorama for my presentation, and I got an A+ on it. It was the best diorama in the class, and everybody thought I did a great job doing my delivery. And the teacher I had was really tough, so he was when he gave me the A+, I was like, dude, I guess I really did well. But later on, I read a book called Aztec, I think it was called, by, what's his name? It was his first novel, too. And I actually only read half of it, but I was fascinated with the whole Aztec society. And then to follow up on Aztec, my interest in Aztec was finding out about an opera by one of my favorite composers, Roger Sessions. You've heard me mention his name before. His magnum opus is an opera called Montezuma, which is about the Hernan Cortez conquest of the Aztecs, of Montezuma II. That opera was first performed in 1962, I believe, in Munich or in Germany somewhere, in German. And it wasn't until 1977 or 78, I believe, maybe 76, it was the 70s, the late 70s, that Sarah Caldwell, American impresario, a great female, great conductor, and head of the Boston Opera Company, put on Montezuma, as it should be in English, because it was written in English. And Kenti became interested in that opera because, one, Roger Sessions was this crunchy music guy. It wasn't recorded, but I did a search for it, and I found the vocal score in a library once, and I took a photocopy of the first couple pages, and I just, like, wondered what it sounded like. And then I eventually found a copy of the broadcast. And that was sucked. That sucked, the first one I found. I paid $75 for it. And eventually I found a really nice-sounding copy of it for free. It was through trading. And I cherish it. And I actually eventually found a copy of the libretto. I mean, not the libretto, the whole score. I paid $100 for it on adbooks.com. I think I mentioned that, antiquarian bookstore online. And that was really cool. So I have that score, and I love the opera. And actually, my recording of it, what I did is I actually went through and made marks where the different scenes changed and everything, and I made a nice little synopsis. So I'm really proud of that project. So if anybody's interested in the opera Montezuma, let me know, and I'll send you a copy with my little notes and everything. But anyway, the Aztecs. But now for the Aztecs. The Aztecs were pre-Columbian Mesoamerican people. They were in central Mexico from the 14th through the 16th centuries, and they actually called themselves Mexicas. And the Aztec Empire was Tenochtitlan, which was where Mexico City is today. And that was actually once a big – it was an island in a big lake, which we'll get into that later. The Hernan Cortez conquered the Aztecs in 1521. And the language of the Aztecs was Nahuatl, Nahuatl. I'm probably murdering it, but that's the name of their language. The Aztec people, or the Mexicas, were part of the seven tribes that fled Aztlán. And Aztlán was a group of powerful elite that ruled these seven tribes. And this is all from the Oban Codex, which is, you know, probably, well, I don't know. This is from Wikipedia. So that's probably from, you know, unearthing Mexican whatever. the Spanish conquistadors referred to them as Mexicas. I mean, this is actually the first time I've heard this, but I have to assume it's true. You know, I've always thought Aztecs, Mexicans, you know, and that Mexicans were actually, today's Mexicans were Spanish, but apparently the, you know, Mexicans of the day are, you know, mostly Spanish and Mexicas or Aztecs. So interesting. Their name Mexicas may have come from several different areas, okay? There's an old Nahuatl word for the sun. The name of their leader was Mextitli, and there was also a weed by the name of, like, something like Mexica. And when they left the Aztlan people, apparently they were, like, nomadic, and they were given this place to live, but they weren't allowed to fish in the water, so they had to eat something, so they ate this weed, which grew. It also could mean Magui, the navel of the Magui, and I believe that's a type of cactus. And there's also another meaning to their name. Or is that it? That's it. Weed people. The weed eaters. Okay, I want to read a little bit about the history of the Aztecs. There's really no understanding about the true origin of the Mexicas. The Mexica. The word Aztlan, which they apparently escaped, is actually just means a place of origin. So it's most likely, you know, mythological, and the truth of where they came from will probably not be known. You know, who knows? Maybe there's something written in one of these codices. Probably they came from, like, you know, northern Mexico. But anyway, they came to the Valley of Mexico, and at that time there are many city-states more powerful than the Mexica, soon to be Aztec. And this is in 1248 that they arrived in Chapultepec. And they were eventually expelled from Chapultepec. I would never be a good Aztec. In 1299, the Chihuahuan ruler, Cocoxtli, sounds like a porn movie, gave them permission to settle in the empty barrens of Tizapan. Does this sound familiar? Okay, you can live here in the barren lands and make good of yourself. It's sort of like what happened to the Israelis, you know, with Israel when they were buying up that land. It was all barren land. Where they were eventually assimilated with Chihuahuan culture. Now, this is the funny part, and it's sort of gross. In 1323, the Mexica asked the new ruler of Chihuahuan, Achicometl, for his daughter in order to make her the goddess Yachihuatl. Unbeknownst to the king, the Mexicas actually planned to sacrifice her. As the story goes, during a festival dinner, a priest, an Aztec priest, came out wearing her flayed skin as part of the ritual. Oh, sounds like, what's that book? Silence of the Lambs. Upon seeing this, the king and the people of Chihuahuan were horrified and expelled the Mexicas. I mean, that is the height of rudeness, you know. What would Miss Manners say about that? If you're attending a party of the people of whose daughter you just sacrificed and flayed the skin off of, do not wear her skin to the dinner. So if the Aztecs weren't on crack, they were on some other kind of drug. Because, as the Aztec legend goes, the Aztecs were shown a vision of an eagle perched on a prickly pear cactus, clutching a snake in its talons. This vision indicated that this was the location where they were to build their home. In any event, the Aztecs eventually arrived on a small swampy island in Lake Texcoco. They were sold a swamp. And let's see here. And that was in 1325. In 1376, they elected their first Huey Talatani, who is Acamapichtli, who's living in Texcoco at the time. So this has all happened fairly recent. I mean, if you think about it, 1325 to 1519, that's only a couple hundred years. I mean, America's that old, okay? It was born and died in 200 years' time, okay? So it can happen. But, I mean, that whole area, right, was there's civilizations were there long before the Aztecs. I mean, there's the Toltecs and who was there centuries earlier. I don't know if they had human sacrifice, but that's what Aztecs are known for. I mean, that's the when you think of Aztecs, you think of human sacrifice, and you think of huge and expansive and at least I do from what I've read, a very rich and full of gold and stuff. So they were in this area, and over a 50-year period, they sort of assimilated power, and they assassinated each other's rulers, and they finally had this thing called a Triple Alliance. And Montezuma, the family, Montezuma's family, because Montezuma II was the Huitzilopochtli or whatever at the time when Cortez came. And he was that for, I don't know, something like 20 years. Interestingly, a side note, is that there was apparently some sort of Aztec prophecy saying that a white god, the white god is going to come on on something like a horse, because they didn't have horses then. And so when the Spanish came, it was these white men on these animals, which they thought were demons or something, gods, and they thought they were gods, you know, and they thought it was the prophecy. It was Quetzalcoatl was going to return. Quetzalcoatl's their god. And he's like in the shape of a feather and stuff like that. So, but yeah, interesting. They thought Cortez was Quetzalcoatl returned. Interesting. In the opera Montezuma, they talk about this. And in the opera, the Spanish are showing the Aztecs the pictures of Mary, and they're saying, oh, that's the corn goddess. And they're like, no, this isn't the corn goddess. This is the goddess of Jesus. And, oh, no, Jesus, oh, that's Quetzalcoatl. And so it's very, you know, very cute. Okay, so the height of their empire was like 1486, and it was in 1519 that that Hernan Cortez came. So Montezuma II was the last emperor or whatever. Not really an emperor. I can't really explain it, but there's a whole other way of leadership. In the beginning, the Cortez, right, had figured that there was some sort of like upper class and lower class, and there was, but so what it was the upper classes of the Aztec Empire that were considered noblemen by the Spaniards, and they were treated like that. However, all that changed when after the fall, and then the population was soon forbidden to study law, the law of the land or whatever, and also had the status of minors, minors. From the time of 1520 to 15 whatever, from about 60 years, 1520 to 1580, okay, the population declined by 80%. That means it went from something like, where are my figures, 15 million down to 2 million. And what killed the Aztecs? Epidemics, smallpox and typhus. And as this killed the population, it helped the Spaniards control the population, because what it did is it killed the nobility, the Aztec nobility, the upper class. And so it was easier to control the lower classes. And so as it killed out these larger populations, they sort of forced them. What the Spanish did is they moved the populations closer into more congested areas. And this actually helped increase the infection rate of smallpox and typhus, thus really reducing the population. So if it was like a countryside, right, they would force the country people to come into a city to live and eventually die. So that's New Spain. Something about the rule of the Aztecs, okay? It wasn't an empire, because they didn't conquer the lands. The only thing they expected was tributes to be paid. Sort of like the Ottoman Empire, you know? Because what they did is they went into the area and they expected tributes. I mean, in the Ottoman Empire, they had the blood tax, which is to give the young boys to the Ottoman Empire to be raised as soldiers or whatever, as government officials. And essentially, converting, you know, the boys, and also sort of weakening the people that they conquered. You know, if you're taking their young, they're not going to have soldiers themselves, you know. So it's like, come here, little boy, I'll give you some Turkish delight. But anyway.
Okay, sir, Mr. Turkish. I don't want to be a Muslim, but can I have the Turkish delight anyway?
Marks the close of day. Skies of blue begin to gray. Crimson hues are fading in the west. Evening ever brings to me dreams of days that used to be. Memories of those I love the best. When shadows fall and trees whisper day is ending, my thoughts are ever wending home. When crickets call, my heart is forever yearning once more to be returning home. When the hills conceal the setting sun, stars begin a peeping one by one. Night covers all, and though fortune may forsake me, sweet dreams will ever take me home. When shadows fall and trees whisper day is ending, my thoughts are ever wending home. When crickets call, my heart is forever yearning once more to be returning home. Loving arms are waiting there for me. Precious lips to kiss so tenderly. Night covers all, and though fortune may forsake me, sweet dreams will ever take me home. So, yeah, so was the Aztec Empire had this. You can't really compare the Aztec Empire to Western empires, because it's a whole different structure. Because of tribute, they had this group of people from the different areas. They had a really superior road system. So, and this is basically for a couple things. For messages, I'm making up my own language here. Messages to be messengers to travel from various parts of the Aztec Empire. We'll call it an Aztec Empire, okay? To Tenochtitlan, so Montezuma knows what's going on in the far reaches. And also to have the tributes travel to Tenochtitlan, which is Mexico City, head of the Aztec Empire, where Montezuma was. So such things, you know, were all sorts of things. You could get feathers and, you know, stones and beads and all sorts of things, cloth, firewood, food. And tributes were paid twice or four times a year, depending on, you know, the times. Depending on the year, I guess depending on the calendar and the religious system at the time. There was a barter system at the time. There was no money. So everything was used for barter. Cocoa beans. Oh, that was also cocoa beans was something from Mexico that was brought back. And, you know, chocolate's made from that. The original cocoa drink was made out of the cocoa beans and water. It was really bitter. It was not sweet like we think. Cloth, cotton cloth, salt. These were all mediums for exchange. Another interesting thing about the... okay, hold on, let me pause here. Okay. I just had like an hour and a half break because a friend of ours came. We had tea and talked about all sorts of things. So I'm like, fuck, man. Sorry about that. So this Aztec, the Hui Talatani, what Montezuma was, is sort of like, it was an office that the elders chose. They were chosen by the elders. However, they usually kept it within the same family. It was more like first citizen, the Montezuma. So, let me pause. Aztec society. Okay, the highest class were the pili, or nobility. And, this was not, the class itself was not hereditary, but later on took on hereditary aspects. I mean, anybody could become nobility, but eventually worked so that only the nobility could become nobility. The second part of society was a second class called Mesa Huali, 20% of which were dedicated to agriculture and food production, and the other 80% were warriors and artisans. Eventually, this middle class became dedicated mostly just to arts and crafts, from which most of the income was derived. The third class was slaves. Now, I'm going to read this directly from Wikipedia. Slaves were an important class. Aztecs could become slaves because of debts, as a criminal punishment, or as war captives. Slavery was not hereditary. A slave's children were free. A slave could have possessions and even own other slaves. Slaves could buy their liberty, and slaves could be set free if they were able to show they had been mistreated or if they had children with or were married to their masters. Typically, upon the death of the master, slaves who had performed outstanding services were freed. The rest of the slaves were passed on as part of the inheritance. Now, that sounds really interesting. You know, reading this, it sort of sounds like what's happening into America today. The rich get richer, i.e. the nobility remain the nobility, right? And the middle class is sort of being pushed under. And as there's an ever-increasing debt in America, credit card debt per person, that's an enslavement. You know, I thought of this. Hold on, I'm going to turn my light on. It's an enslavement, period. When I was, in the 90s, right, I had a job. It was the manager of a music store. I was making whatever. But, you know, I wasn't living paycheck. I guess I was living paycheck to paycheck. And I really wasn't able to save anything. But... And I had a credit card, and it's not like I had a huge debt, okay? But I could never pay it off. You know, it took forever to pay it off. It was like this bleeding. And I realized this later on about how credit cards work. They bleed you, you know, a little bit at a time, because that's the best way. I mean, that's how what do they call those bugs? Held on. Parasite is the word. Credit cards are like a parasite, and they're a good parasite because they don't kill the host. They just bleed them to death, a little bit at a time. And, of course, it makes somebody else richer and enslaves the individual. So there is a slave system in the United States, whether you want to believe that or not. And I know there are some of my listeners, well, it's free will, and you have the choice, and you're an adult. You can make a choice, but, you know, I believe that, yeah, we all have free will and everything, but we're also human, and I believe that the human being can be talked into doing anything in a mass, and even a mass level, the way things are marketed and spoken about, and, you know, so watch debt. You know, I don't use a credit card anymore, and I'm paying off whatever, I'm paying off a credit card still, which is not very much. But it's, you know, I don't know. I've never had enough money to just whop it out, you know, so. So there you go. So anyway, that's enough of that. Okay, let me go into the next thing. So there were slaves. Diet was maize and beans and squash and things like that and chilies. In fact, you know, they tortured people. The Aztecs tortured people by tying them up and putting their face over a pit where there was a hot, you know, they had like coals or whatever, and then they would burn chilies, and the chilies would, the irritants would get into the face and eyes and really torture, you know, the individual. You know, I think the ability to torture, the human ability to torture goes unsurpassed. I mean, you know, you hear about all this crap going in Iraq and everything. Why? Now, I know some would say it's original sin or whatever. I don't know why. I really don't know why. It's beyond me why humans want to torture each other or why there's this whole power trip going on. I mean, if that is the original sin, then I believe in original sin. And it's terrible. Terrible. So anyway, this is something interesting. Aztecs also used the maguey extensively. From it, they obtained food, sugar, honey water, fibers for rope and clothing and drink. It was pulque, a fermented beverage with an alcoholic content equivalent to beer. Getting drunk before the age of 60, however, was forbidden. First offenses drew relatively light punishment, but repeat offenses could be punished by death. Okay. Another thing is, a study by Montalano, and I don't know who that is, shows a mean life expectancy of 37 plus or minus 3 years for the population of Mesoamerica. So, for the most part, people died before they could legally drink back then. So, it's interesting. It says here, after the Spanish conquest, some foods were outlawed, particularly amaranth, because of its central role in religious rituals. Amaranth is a grain which has a very high protein content. In fact, I think it's the highest protein content of all the grains. It's a super grain, you know? That's something that should be grown and used for food more, you know, all over the place, you know? So I think, you know, it's just crazy, you know? Why? You know, it's because of the religious, because it was used religiously that the Spanish were like, you know, you can't use amaranth, even though it was like the best food you could eat. How ass backwards is that? Okay, another thing about the Aztecs is the education. Until the age of 14, education was supervised by the parents. After this, there was a school. They, at 15, all boys and girls went to school. And the girls learned how to take care of the house and cook and everything. And the boys were studied how to, I guess, read and do practical things like the military and the writing and astronomy and statesmanship and theology, but it was required that they had education. In America, the United States of America, I mean, that's something that is also required by your, you know, whether you teach them at home or in the school, it is required that they are educated. Isn't it interesting how close the United States is to the Aztec system? So that's that. I'm gonna finish with that. That little bit of information. And you can find more about the Aztecs on Wikipedia, wikipedia.org. Just look for the Aztecs. And you can find it. Hold on. Oh, let me lean down here and get my notes. And that's it for the Aztecs. I wanted to add something here that I read, and it reminds me of neoconservatism. And this is about the beginnings of the beginning of the history of the Aztecs. And this is from Wikipedia. Two of the primary architects of the Aztec Empire were the half-brothers Tlacolal and Moctezuma I, nephews of Itzcoatl. Moctezuma I succeeded Itzcoatl as the Hui Tlatoatani. That's the, you know, we talked about that. He's like the emperor, the first citizen, in 1449. Although he was also offered the opportunity to be the Tlatoani, whatever, Tlactelel preferred to operate as the power behind the throne. So we have two people, Tlactelel, which is the Karl Rove, and Moctezuma I, which is George Bush. Tlactelel reformed the Aztec state and religion. According to some sources, he ordered the burning of most of the extant Aztec books, claiming that they contained lies. He thereupon rewrote the history of the Aztec people, thus creating a common awareness of history for the Aztecs. This rewriting led directly to the curriculum taught to scholars and promoted the belief that the Aztecs were always a powerful and mythic nation, forgetting forever a possible true history of modest origins. One component of this reform was the institution of ritual war, the flower wars, as a way to have trained warriors and created the necessity of constant sacrifices to keep the sun moving. Now, if that doesn't describe the Bush administration and neoconservatism, I don't know what does.
You've been listening to The Flavor Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at kenty@theflatishow.com. Thank you for listening.